Thanks for joining us. This is Notepad. My name is Ibrahim Sani. We're going on with our pre-budget show, talking about some of the items that perhaps would be included in the budget 2023. Also, some of the wish list that is coming in from various sectors in terms of what they want to see in the budget. For this evening, I have with me Aurobindo Ponia, the Director of PwC's Taxation Services in Malaysia, somebody that I have a high regard to, and of course, we need to explore some of the items that he is going to share with us today. Bindo, thanks for taking the time to speak with us. Now, Budget 2023, as expected, is going to be presented on the 7th of October. And of course, in light of that, a general election is looming. Some are speculating that it's going to be presented as soon, or it's going to be dissolved. The parliament is going to be dissolved as soon as the budget is going to be presented. However, this is mere speculation. There are still talks of a general election that is going to take place perhaps March next year or even later than that. What can we expect for this budget this time around?
Well, thank you, Ibrahim. And you are right. Budget 2023, 7th of October, brought forward. And the key here, as you've mentioned, is elections. So there's expected to be a general election, has to be done by mid-2023, but potentially much earlier, as you mentioned, that soon after the budget itself. Now, the problem here is that when we have a budget just before an election, it tends to be known as a budget election. It's a budget which I doubt would be very exciting. I think most of the items that are going to come in the budget are going to be largely meant to look at the rakyat, the voters at the end. I do not see big changes. I do not see big changes to the taxes itself. I see measures which will be similar to the previous years. I see measures that are going to be looked at the individual. So they're going to be looking at measures to help out the B40 group, the M40 group. So possibly there may be some tweaks here and there in terms of personal reliefs, in terms of deductions, which are applicable to the individuals. So you and I, our tax returns when we file it, we are probably going to probably see some additional deductions, which will then at the end of the day provide us with some extra cash in hand once we file our tax returns next year. In terms of the allocations itself, for businesses, possibly for SMEs, because SMEs are recovering from the pandemic. So that's the issue with the pandemic. So we are probably going to see some help from them, maybe in terms of some additional deductions, potentially some tweaks to the tax rates, if not to direct tax rates, maybe to indirect tax rates. But again, to be honest, as I mentioned earlier, I don't think this is going to be an exciting, groundbreaking budget. Pandemic, our finances are poor, so we cannot afford to be too, I would say, ambitious with this budget.
Okay, within your opening remarks, there's a lot for me to explore. But before we get into the weeds of some of the ideas that you think personal reliefs is going to take place or tax deductions, I want to talk about policies still. Do you feel that, say, for instance, the introduction of the GST will not be seen here because of it being an election budget? That's the first. The second is, of course, we're looking at this being a rather populist budget. Any other policy matters you think that is going to be introduced in this budget, you think?
Okay. I don't see major policy shifts. In terms of GST itself, I think GST will be introduced sometime in the future, but not in this budget. A government cannot afford to introduce new taxes, wide-ranging new taxes in a budget. At the end of the day, if you look at it, you and I both, we don't like paying taxes. The populace doesn't like paying taxes. And GST in itself, if you ask me, GST is a good tax, all right? It can be regressive. But the reason why I say GST is a good tax is that it's a wide-ranging tax. It's a tax which can help a country raise revenue efficiently, right? It is not the best tax around, but it is the best that we know of. And this has been around since the 1940s, 1950s. If I'm not mistaken, it was France which introduced it first, France and Germany, right? Now, GST is seen to be regressive because it's a tax on consumption. So being a tax on consumption, it impacts lower income households more than it impacts high income households. Meaning that if a two-person family earns 1,000 ringgit a month and a two-person family earns 10,000 ringgit a month, the person who earns 1,000 ringgit a month is going to be spending a lot more on consumption on groceries, for example. The percentage of their household income going towards grocery shopping is going to be higher than the percentage of the person earning 10,000 ringgit a month. So hence it is seen as regressive. So personally, I think that any GST, if it's reintroduced in Malaysia, should be coupled with other policy matters. This should include things like maybe aid for low-income families. This could be in terms of the Bantuan Rakyat, the Bantuan Sara Hidup, etc., and all that. It could be used as an avenue to channel aid to them. It also would probably help once we actually set that up. We can also start looking at, for example, our subsidy schemes. Our subsidies are huge, all right? Setting up a proper cash transfer program can help the government in a way deal with the issue of subsidies.
Following back to what we said earlier, there are personal reliefs and tax deductions that will be seen or should be seen in this budget. Again, I would like to postpone that kind of conversation, still sticking on to policy. Do you have any ideas in terms of how the government is going to fund its expenses? We're looking at, say, for instance, subsidies that is being introduced by the government, 80 billion so far, 100 billion likely towards December this year. We're looking at dividends from the Petronas up from 25 billion to 50 billion. I don't think there's anything more that Petronas can give. Where's the money going to come from if not from GST, if not from, say, more tax receivables because of the tax deductions that are going to be introduced? How's the government going to fund its own expenses?
That's actually a very good question, Ibrahim. And here is where I do have some concerns. And I think these concerns are also shared across by the Ministry of Finance and also tax administrators in Malaysia. Now, I would probably use a third party to come up with the numbers, all right? Now, if you look at the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, they are a research body in Paris, and they do a lot of research, including tax research, right? They recently, in July 22, released their tax to GDP reports, and that included a report for Malaysia. Now, in Malaysia, the key findings, they were using the 2020 GDP numbers, right? Not 2021, right? Now, the 2020 GDP numbers showed that, tax to GDP numbers, showed that Malaysia had a tax to GDP ratio of 11.4%. The average for Asia Pacific, the countries measured in Asia Pacific, was 19.1%. And the OECD average was 33.5%. That means we are below the Asia Pacific average by about 7.7%. Now, the question is that, have we maintained this 11.4% or have we kind of worsened over the years? And unfortunately, the OECD has found that our tax to GDP ratio has actually declined from 2007 to 2020 from 14.8% to 11.4%. This means our tax collections compared to our GDP is reducing. Now, to maybe put it in context, all right, if I take the lowest, that 14.8% to 11.4%, that's about a 3.4% decrease. If I use the 2020 GDP numbers, that's about 48 billion ringgit. If I take it against the Asia Pacific average of 19%, that's a 7.7% gap. We're talking about 108 billion ringgit if I use 2020 GDP numbers. So tax collection is an issue here. And I know our administrators, when I've spoken to them and all that, they see it as an issue. We need to look at this. We need to look at tax reform in order to actually reverse this trend.
Okay, hang on. These are. I'm so sorry about my ignorance, but these are the first time I'm hearing about these numbers, particularly when it comes to tax to GDP ratio, Malaysia versus vis-a-vis Asia Pac average vis-a-vis OECD. Is it because of our narrow tax base structure, or is it because of the collection issue, i.e., people, government are not aware of the grey economy? Is it because, you know, something like e-invoicing is not being done yet, perhaps this time round? Where's the key problems here? Or is it all of the above?
It is all of the above plus some. Right? It's all of the above plus some. And again, I must make it clear that this is not an issue Malaysia's the only country which faces, right?
No, but you mentened Asia-Pac average is 19%. So exactly. It does seem like Malaysia is the only...
Yeah, but there are countries in Asia-Pac which are lower than us, all right? There are countries in Asia-Pac which are lower than us. I mean, I give you an example of Singapore. We also like to compare with Singapore. Singapore is about 12%, all right? So, and Cambodia is about 20%, all right? What ideally I would like to see in Malaysia is a rate of about 15% tax to GDP. I don't think it is feasible for us to look at going to the OECD average of 33%, etc. But 15%, 15 to 17% would be a sweet spot for Malaysia, right? Now, in terms of your question as to what's going wrong, where is all these gaps coming from, where we are missing it? I think you have rightfully mentioned it is a combination of factors. We are looking at a narrow tax base, all right? And we are looking at over-dependence on certain natural resources, oil being one of them.
Mm.
And we are also looking at a pretty, I would say, substantial black or shadow economy, right? Now, it is extremely difficult to quantify the black or shadow economy, hence it's known as a black or shadow economy. Nobody knows enough numbers about it, right? So we can guess on some of these numbers, right? Now, one reason I'm a proponent of GST is that GST, in addition to broadening the tax base, also forces businesses to register themselves. They want to register themselves in order for them to get their GST refunds, to get the zero-rated benefits, etc. If they don't do that, they end up paying more, costing them more. Now, when they register themselves, an important thing happens. It is the lifeblood of tax administration. It is information, data. So when you have more data from the businesses, you know exactly how much income they're getting, what type of expenses they're incurring. It allows you to more efficiently track and tax them, not just from GST perspective, but also from direct tax perspective. And go ahead, Ibrahim.
Then how is it that the OECD average is 33.5% window?
Okay. OECD average, okay, let's say maybe we take some of the high tax countries, let's say the Nordic countries, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nordic countries' tax rates can go up to close to about 40-50%, right? So those rates go up to 40-50%, and they have probably a lot more experience and years under their belt in dealing with taxation. They did not reach 33% overnight. So it's not as though I set up my tax system today and based on 33.5%.
Okay.
It took them years to grow. It will take us years to grow as well, and I think we can do it.
There's also that whole idea of how we can do more to increase our tax revenues in the context of the current form of taxes or taxation system. GST is hypothetical. What can we do right now when it comes to the current form of taxes?
Current form of taxes, I think, because it's an election year and we're not going to really see a major change in the tax system itself, right, the tax structure, I think GST will not come out in this budget, but maybe in the coming years it may come out. In that interim, I think tax administration becomes a very important factor. Now, our main tax administrator for direct taxes is the Lembaga Hasil Dalam Negeri, and our indirect taxes is the Royal Customs Department of Malaysia, RCMD. The lion's share at the moment is still collected by the Lembaga Hasil Dalam Negeri. They have improved their administration by leaps and bounds over the last 20 years, right? Now, can they do more? Yes, they can do more. What is happening now globally, when we see with many of the developed countries, is the use of information technology, IT, trying to push businesses and transactions electronically. If you notice in the last 2 years in the pandemic, there is a saying, you never let a crisis go to waste. And I think it was good that during the pandemic, there was a push for more e-wallets, more, I would say, online payments, et cetera, and all that. This leaves a trail, an electronic trail, which the tax authorities can audit, can track. And I think this push should continue. Because a black economy at the end of the day, a shadow economy, is an economy which works in the shadows. It does not leave a trail. So there are no receipts. When there are no receipts, it becomes actually impossible for someone to accurately audit you, to accurately decide how much income needs to be taxed. So by pushing all of this into a formal economy, in terms of getting people to do it electronically, to ensure receipts are issued, etc., and all that, this will definitely go leaps and bounds in terms of improving the tax collection. I'll give you an example. Yeah? There are some countries out there, right, like Korea, Mexico, etc. What they do is that the system, the IT system, is tied between the business. So let's say I'm a shop and I am selling electronic items. When an individual goes to the shop and he or she purchases, let's say, a television, it is rung up in the cash register. That information is conveyed to the tax authority.
In real time?
Yes, real time. And the tax authority then has a record of who bought and how much it was paid. And then it knows exactly how much the business is making. And that business, when it actually buys the TV, let's say from the wholesaler or from the manufacturer, there will be an electronic trail as well. And some tax authorities are moving towards, I would say, automatic tax compliance. In other words, meaning is that once that information tax authority, I will generate the tax return, send it to you and tell you that this is my
tax bill
for you. If you don't agree with it, let me know why. If you agree with it, please pay your tax. That's how it's moving. And I think that's how we need to move as well. But the other important thing, Ibrahim, is that we tend to concentrate on maybe the Klang Valley and maybe Penang, et cetera, and all the economic centers of Malaysia, and we put a lot of effort here. Yeah. So when it comes to all these e-payments and electronic wallets and all that, we need to start expanding this across the country. Yeah? We need to be looking at doing it in Sabah, Sarawak, Perak, Kedah, Kelantan, everywhere kind of thing. We need to educate our people. Taxpayer education is extremely important on this. If you ask me, taxpayer education should be part of the school curriculum. I mean, not maybe an examinable subject, but maybe something which our young should be taught about as the importance of paying taxes and what these taxes are used for.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a question that's probably going to get you in trouble then, because it's not just about the tax collection. It's also about how the public appreciates the money being spent. I think tracking of how the allocated budget has been used in terms of the results that has been garnered, the outcome that has been achieved, I think all that is important. I, for one, am thinking about that all the time. I'm okay with paying taxes. I understand my obligation to pay my tax. I want to know where my money is going, my friend. Every cent counts, you know. So is that the hesitancy in terms of, say, folks coming out in the open saying, okay, you know what, this is how much I made in the year, this is how much I know is going to be my tax bill, so please spend it wisely, and by the way, show me how you spend it. Isn't that's the point of where all this transparency is going?
Yeah, I don't think I'll get in trouble when I answer this question of yours, all right? I don't think I will, all right? Now, again, I will use the Nordic countries, okay, as an example. High tax rates, high tax compliance. Now, the reason why there's high tax rates and high tax compliance is that out of all the studies they have done, taxpayers there are quite happy to pay high taxes because of the public services they receive. You're talking about education, you're talking about health, you're talking about childcare. Right? I lived in Europe for a while, all right? I lived in the Netherlands, a very progressive country. Yeah? And for example, childcare, here we are running around, et cetera, and all that, trying to figure out, okay, I need to get a maid to look after my parents, to look after my children, et cetera, and others so I can go to work. There they have proper childcare facilities funded by the state. They have social security for the unemployed, et cetera, and all that. But that is where the high taxes go to. There are, of course, leakages. There are, of course, bad spending decisions made in almost every country. But by and large, the money is well spent. And it has been shown that taxpayers are happy to pay taxes if they get a return on that. We are all business people at the end of the day. If I give you money, I want something in return for my money.
Yeah, quality lah.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, I spoke about this topic, global minimum tax, with Hui Bang of Deloitte yesterday, but I want to talk to you about this as well. Largely because of the OECD introducing global minimum tax, if I'm not mistaken, it's 15%. Malaysia's corporate tax hovering about 24%. Money's on the table, it needs to be taken, but it's not. Where do you feel when it comes to Malaysian government in terms of managing the global minimum tax requirement that is going to be implemented across the world very, very soon?
Okay. We've got to be careful about that in the sense that it's a global minimum tax requirement, 15%, but it only applies to a certain category of taxpayers. It doesn't apply to everyone. They are looking at the very large taxpayers, and the threshold they are using is it must be a multinational. So not a national player, but a multinational player.
Okay.
Their consolidated group revenue must be 750 million euros and above. That's about 3.5 billion ringgit, right? Mm. Mm. So there are lots of small multinationals out there below the threshold who will not be impacted, right? So it's just big multinationals. And now what it says is that these multinationals, without going into all the complex details of this.
Thank you for sparing us, Bundi.
Yeah, that they must pay, at least where they operate, a minimum 15% tax, all right? So now let's take an example of a Malaysian multinational. Let's say multinational A in Malaysia has got operations in country C overseas. Now, in country C, if it pays less than 15% minimum tax, what will happen is that Malaysia should do a top up here. All countries here will do a top up there. Yeah. So either way, that multinational will get impacted and its effective tax rate in that jurisdiction will come up to 15%.
Mm.
Yeah. So now this is going to be rolled out globally, right? Malaysia can't be the only country to do it. If the only country does it, then everybody else doesn't do it, then
it's then basically... we're out. Yeah.
Yeah.
But because of this global minimum tax impacts tax incentives, for instance, does this mean that Malaysia will definitely be no longer attractive for foreign direct investments?
From a pure incentive perspective, you've got to remember is that because this is being rolled out globally, everyone's incentives are going to be impacted.
Okay.
So it's not as though Malaysia is the only one who's going to be impacted in terms of incentives, but everybody else's incentives are going to be impacted as well.
Okay. Right? Okay.
Yeah. So again, depending on the class of taxpayers, like I said, these are the very large taxpayers, right? They don't just look at tax as the determining factor when they're making their investment decisions. Tax is one of the determining factors. Now, there are other factors, of course, infrastructure, workforce, ease of doing business. Yeah, Malaysia, I mean, we are not top of the league table on this, but neither are we at the bottom of the league table.
Yeah,
I think these are the areas that the government needs to work on in order to be able to attract FDI. So we need to start looking at our upgrading our infrastructure, upskilling our workforce, etc. And then, of course, we can also look at other measures. I mean, this could be by way of grants, etc., and all that to attract the right kind of industries to come into Malaysia. That's probably okay. How we should move forward.
Okay, Bindo, we're going for a short break. When we come back, we'll discuss a little bit more. Actually, we're going to be talking about some of the fun things, which is personal reliefs and tax deductions. It's coming up after these messages. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me Aurobindo Ponia, the Director of Tax Services Malaysia of PwC. Bindo, let's talk about tax relief. I, for one, am keeping an eye out of what I can get as a rakyat. What do you think I can get this year?
Okay. Now, we already have a number of reliefs, all right? We got release in
not enough. Not nearly enough. How about
not
that?
Enough, lah. I know we always complain. But we have to probably, I mean, end of the day is that I don't think the personal reliefs are going to be of great impact to the higher income earners. Yeah? We are probably looking at the lower bands. So we could probably see in terms of broadening of the bands, that means you have to cross a certain threshold before you move in the higher rate, etc. and all that. We could see that happen. We could see potentially an increase in reliefs, let's say maybe, for example, EPF contribution. Yep. There has been a lot of talk because people have withdrawn their EPF contributions, etc. and all that. Maybe to encourage them to put more money back into EPF, maybe a kind of an increase in the maximum deduction you can claim for EPF.
Okay.
So things like this. Because remember, personal reliefs are generally trying to encourage certain types of behavior. Yep. So trying to encourage savings, spending on certain types of items, let's say IT.
Yeah.
So they'll be tuned towards that. We already have a pretty broad range of personal reliefs. So I probably see maybe the amounts being increased, how much more you can claim, et cetera, for those items.
Okay.
What about incentives on, say, for instance, assisting parents? That kind of relief needs to be inculcated more. Buying of, say, IT products instead of being able to claim something for once in 2 years, make it yearly. But quite honestly, we're buying IT items every year, something like that. Where's the logical, common sense items that should be introduced this year?
Yeah. I mean, think about it. Okay, parents, okay? I mean, Malaysia, I mean, we like many Asian countries, end of the day, is that there's always an expectation or rather a duty, in terms of children looking after their parents and all that. So this can be, and there has been, I mean, there is a kind of a relief in the tax returns where you're allowed to. Can that be increased? Potentially, yes. Yeah. But the problem also is that what happens if your parent is retired and on a very, very substantial pension, etc. And you're not really looking after the parent, but you're still claiming the relief. How do you police that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm one of them. My mother would be very upset with you. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, you just confessed this online. So, end of the day,
This is an honest to God interview. I've confessed to so many. I'm not going to air this interview anymore after this, Bindo.
Yeah. So
how do you police these things, right? That's the point. How do you police these things? I mean, takkanlah LHDN to call every parent in the country to double check, you know, their...
Exactly. So we got to be careful about the deductions we give in terms of whether they're by police. I mean, if you talk about an increase in EPF deductions, that is easily policed because you can actually track and see that.
Yeah.
When you talk about buying a computer, right? I can buy a computer, I can show you my credit card receipt, I can show you my shop receipt, etc. and all that. But what is there to prevent me from buying the computer and giving it to, I don't know, my nephew or my cousin or something like that? Yeah.
But doesn't matter, like the consumption was done, right?
I mean, the consumption was done. So, but my point here being is the end of the day is that certain things need to be policed. Yeah. Exactly how much you police it and whether it is worth policing. The other thing in terms of tax administration, end of the day, is that you are not going to commit resources to go audit 500 ringgit. You may want to audit 500,000 ringgit. Yeah, you may want to audit 5 million ringgit, but not 500 ringgit. So maybe below a certain threshold, maybe what they can do is that, okay, for this, we will let you do a claim, etc. And we may audit you, but in practice, it probably may not happen.
Okay. Bindo, there's plenty more to discuss, I suppose. But for now, our time is up and I've done too many confessions already. I don't want to out myself even further. Well, that was our conversation with Aurobindo Ponia, the Director of PwC Taxation Services in Malaysia. There's plenty of conversations like this that's going to be covered on Astro Avenue over the next few days leading up to Budget 2023, which is going to happen on the 7th of October. I'll be hosting that show together with my colleagues Najib Arif, Haris Ashraf Hasnan and many more on Astro Avenue. So do keep an eye out on that. I'll also be doing a live show on that as well on the eve of 7th of October. So do keep an eye on all our shows on all Astro Avenue's platforms. Until then, thanks very much for watching. And Bindo, I don't want to talk to you anymore lah. You quoted so much on my razi already.
If you get in trouble with the IRB, give us a call, okay?
PwC, save the day. Cannot lah, I cannot afford your fees. All right, catch you in the next one.
All right, take care, Ibrahim. Thank you. Bye.